101, a version 1 podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 101 podcast, conversations with the UK and Ireland's top IT and digital leaders. My name is Suraj Shah and today is a very special episode as I'm joined by three of the people who helped to set up UK GovCamp and also work in the public sector. We have Sarah Baskerville, Amanda Smith, who leads user-centered policy design in MOJ Digital, and David Durant, a senior delivery manager within Hackney Council's IT department, otherwise known as Hack IT. Thank you all for joining me today.
Hello, thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
So today we're focusing on UK GovCamp, what it is, how it works, and what makes it so unique, and why it's not just about the event itself, but what happens afterwards. We'll also look at how the pandemic has affected the event and the changes that needed to be made. So Sarah, perhaps to begin with, it would be great if you could tell us a bit more about UK GovCamp and what it's all about.
Okay, great. And I realised I didn't actually tell you why I did. So I work in Department for Transport in Finance. Not exactly sexy UK GovCamp world, but so UK GovCamp, this is where it started off way back and seems like forever now, but since started around 2007, 2008, when a lovely chap called Jeremy Gould thought it would be a great idea to just bring all the people that are working in and around and across government and together in one place in one day so we could chat with one another, figure out what we're up to, what we wanted to do, our frustrations and our successes. And that was a small event held in the Ministry of Justice back in 2008. And from then on, it's grown and grown and grown in size to now we're now in 2021 and UK GovCamp is still running. It's known as the Glastonbury of government. And that's because to go to GovCamp, normally you have to enter a ticket lottery and there's only 250 tickets. And folk have said it's easier getting to Glastonbury than it is GovCamp. So there's quite a bit of excitement around that. Why did we do this? Like, who comes to GovCamp and the GovCamp community? GovCamp, it's an open and free event. It's based on the founding principles of open space. It is open to anyone. Now, you don't need to be a public servant. You don't need to be working in the public sector. You could be in the voluntary sector, academia, or you could just be an interested member of the public that wants to know what's happening. And around this, there's been this community that has built up over the years of like-minded folks, some folk that are techie, other folk that are more policy-centric, people from the private sector that want to get an inkling and understanding of what's happening in the public sector world. And we've got this lovely community that comes together once a year for our annual unconference. And yes, this year was a little bit different, but it was still a fantastic event. It was our first ever online UK GovCamp in 2021. It was an amazing feat that we pulled this off. And the feedback we've had from folk has just been absolutely amazing.
Brilliant. And so maybe before we kind of go on to what an unconference is, Sarah, what can you tell me a bit about in terms of the growth? So how many people attended the first ever event and kind of, I think you said 250 people attend now and how many people kind of apply for these tickets?
Yeah, sure. So the sort of first ever one that back in 2008, there was 105 people that signed up. And over the years, this has grown we have the ticket lottery and we have around about 600 to 700 people that sign up for that, but we only have 250 places. One year we did make it a bit larger to about 350, but the feedback we got from the community was it was just too big and too large to everyone felt a bit overwhelmed for that. So we've kept the numbers down to 250. That seems to be like the magical number when it comes to an unconference. And yeah, it's certainly worked. That magic formula has worked throughout the years, but we don't just stay static. We do listen to feedback, and Amanda and David will be able to tell you the things we've introduced and changed over the years to make GovCamp what it is today.
Yeah, and the whole idea of unconference, David, is that something you can tell me a bit more about and explain what it is?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So GovCamp is just one example of events that are run in an unconference style. The idea of an unconference is there is no set agenda on the day. You have an opening session where, just as Sarah was saying, you have large numbers of like-minded people have come along to the event. They know roughly what the event itself is about. For GovCamp, it's to do with people who are interested in originally digital, but sort of now much more of the larger space in the government sector. But they turn up, there is no set agenda. At the start of the day, we ask the audience who would like to pitch ideas for a session that they would like to run. And then everybody queues up. They get about a minute before they get crooked off the stage to say, this is the thing that I would like to talk about today. At the end of each pitch, we ask the audience to put their hands up, just to have a show of interest. And then people like Sarah run around very speedily writing down what the people are pitching, how many people are interested. And then we have normally a grid which says when we're in a physical space, this is the number of sessions we have during the day and what time they're on and which rooms we've got available. And then we allocate the different sessions to the different spaces. And people normally have somewhere around 45 minutes to an hour to get together with like-minded people. And the person who did the pitch will say, I am very interested in talking about issues in government procurement, or I am very interested in how we can increase diversity in hiring in government, or, you know, the topics that they are particularly passionate about. And then people get together in that room, they have an hour to have that conversation. And the really strong takeaway from an unconference might be the discussions that you have in the room and the ideas that people come up with at the time. But really, it's meeting other like-minded people who are really interested in that one thing that the person who pitched is really passionate about. And then they can go away afterwards and carry on working together on that thing as a way to, you know, improve how things happen in government. So it's this really fantastically connected together networking event. So GovCamp, as Sarah was saying, has been running for quite a long time, and that's an excellent example of a non-conference. But just to mention another couple of ones quickly that have been done in recent years, there's an organization called One Team Gov, which reaches across national boundaries, doing a similar kind of thing. And they ran a non-conference that had, I think it was about 1,000 people from something like 18 different countries came to the UK a few years ago. And that was an amazing event from people all over the world. But what's really interesting also is that unconferences have started to become quite mainstream, in that there's an event every year in the UK government called the Top 200, where the top 200 highest ranking civil servants get together to talk about things that are going on in government. And that's a 2-day event. And a couple of years ago, they decided to give over the entire second day to an unconference style way of doing things. So there was no set agenda for day two. The most senior people, the perm secretaries, all these people, they're pitching at the same level as everybody else. And then they go off and have sessions about the things they want to talk about. So it's just a really good way of being spontaneous and passionate about the conversations that you want to have. So the main thing to remember about these kind of events is they're all organized by volunteers. So the committee, the people who've organized the event, not just Sarah and Amanda and myself, there's a number of other people who are involved, and we all give our time for free just because we really care about improving things in government. And then there's also a number of other people that get involved on the day. My role in GovCamp for the past few years has been the person on the committee who's been responsible for looking after what we call the camp makers, which is the on-the-day volunteers. And traditionally, they do all sorts of different roles, from organizing the free lunch we normally put on and various different things. But we also assign a scribe to every session to take notes, which we then make publicly available for anybody, even people who haven't attended on the day, to be able to read and find out what's going on. And we did that this year. So for people who are interested, they can look at the UK GovCamp website and go and look at some of the session notes that were on there and find the sort of things that were discussed on the day. So we're very, very thankful to our volunteers. We're also very thankful to our sponsors. So we have a number of public and private sector sponsors that give us money towards the event. They've enabled us to do things like, as I say, when we had an in-person event, we used to put free lunch on for everybody. But we also, as I think we're going to talk about in a little bit, we have little giveaways for people who come along. But we also are enabled through sponsorship to give out certain grants. Now, that might be for things like where we pay for people to have childcare so they can attend, but they wouldn't be able to otherwise. But we're also very keen to sponsor other similar unconference events. So if there are listeners who are thinking, this sounds like a really interesting thing that I might want to organize for the area that I work in, especially if you work in the public sector, if you reach out to us at UK GovCamp on Twitter, we can have a conversation, and it's possible that we might be able to give you a bit of money to help you get started doing a similar kind of thing.
Brilliant. So with on conferences, what is it, Amanda, that's so attractive to participants to get involved and also even set up follow-up events like the ones David was alluding to?
Absolutely. So with GovCamp, we've always had a vision of becoming the most inclusive event and community that we can be. And I think it's really important to talk about how the demographic and the diversity of the event has changed over the years. So I went to my first GovCamp in 2011, and the demographic back then was still pretty white, still pretty male and middle class. And a lot of the sessions were really focused on very detailed kind of tech sessions. And if we look at some of the data, because we do collect information about our attendees to help us improve the event, I think one year we had probably 78% of the participants were male and 22% were female. And over recent years, we've done lots of really great work to make sure that that is much more balanced, that we have much more gender diversity for those who identify as male, female, non-binary, and that we also broaden out in terms of our ethnicity, and that we also broaden out in terms of making sure the event is suitable for those who may be neurodiverse or who, as David mentioned already, may need a grant or a bursary to attend and join us. And one of the things we're really proud about with GovCamp is that we're always trying to attract new people into the community. It is a community, it's not a clique. And year on year, when we do our day of pitching, then we get folks to kind of raise their hand if they're new. And we usually find it's about half and half split in terms of people who are returning and people who are brand new to the community. And like I say, we've wanted to make sure it's the most inclusive event that it can be. So we make sure that we provide support for people who, you know, are confident and people who are shy, people who are introverted and people who are extroverted. If people don't feel confident in pitching a session themselves, we would do that pitch for them and stand up in front and get their idea out there. And equally, when we've gone online this year, then we've done pre-pitching. And that has really opened it up for people who didn't feel too confident to stand in front of a room and do it on the day, which has been great for us. I think Sarah mentioned at the beginning, or David, that we do kind of 1 minute for those pitching. And one of the things that we've changed over the years is we used to have a session timer and we used to have an air horn. And when people said to us that made them feel anxious, we got rid of it. So we're always really open to learning from our community and making things much more better. And there was something that my really great friend, Noor, said to us earlier this year, which is that event organizers hold the space. And so we have to hold people through that. And that is something we've really taken into our hearts over these years, is thinking about how we provide the most safe and inclusive and welcoming space to our community. We also put on socials. So we run things like Cheese Camp and Pub Camp and Tea Camp to get people socializing with people and meeting new friends. And we also reduce those barriers to entry. So for us this year, it was really important with online GovCamp that we used kind of known and familiar tech. We didn't try to kind of overboil things and kept things simple. And we had a tech test day for folks who hadn't used Zoom before, hadn't used Meet, and we were testing and checking they could join us correctly on the day. As David mentioned, we give out bursaries and grants to people so they can have money to spend on travel coming down to London when we were in person or on their childcare. We've also in recent years introduced a creche, which we're really proud of. So we work with a number of different organisations to put that on so folks can drop their children off in the morning and then join us for the full day. And as David mentioned, we provide grants to help seed some of those local events as well, so that we're being as open as we can and inclusive as we can. And it's simple things like providing a quiet room as well. So people have found the event overwhelming sometimes. They need some space to think. So we have a dedicated quiet room, which is kind of tucked away in the corner of the venue so people can gather their thoughts and come back into the group. Wow. So lots of really good things. And I think our commitment towards that and talking about it and putting our hands up where we get things wrong and making it better is something we're all really proud of.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys have thought about so many kind of different areas of inclusivity, which is obviously really important. In terms of the kind of way you said you collect data and just to make sure you're on top of things, I'm guessing you do a lot of surveys and feedback in that way. Is there anything else that you do?
Yeah, so we collect, like I say, data on all attendees at the point of registering for a ticket. So that gives us some demographic data to understand how inclusive we are being and where we need to improve. Throughout the year, we have done surveys before, but we find that folks are so busy that we tend to just ask for lots of ad hoc feedback. And also after every single event, then we have our organizer kind of get together in retrospective. That's normally held together over karaoke. This year we'll have to do something a little bit different. And we really listen to what the community have said to think about how we can plan next year and get it better. So we're trying to keep it as kind of ad hoc and light touch as we can. But I hope that folks always know we are always open to receiving any of that feedback through any kind of means.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. And Sarah, in terms of, you know, all of these factors obviously point towards making the event more successful. Is there a way that you guys are tracking that as well? Is it just the sheer interest that you're getting now a year on year? Or are there other factors as well that you look at?
Well, it's not as if we measure like folks' happiness or you know, score 1 out of 10. What is it? How good or bad was GovCamp is? It's about actually engaging with the community. So it's all about engagement. So we do informal engagement on the day with the community, but we also do informal engagement through the usual sort of social media channels throughout the year and test the water with them and just have that constant conversation. We don't need to have the survey. We've got the engagement, and that's key that we keep. We're kind of like the gel that keeps the community together by having these events and keeping that engagement open.
Yeah, sure. And I suppose it's not just about the event, is it? It's about what happens post-event and how people keep in touch and actually bring some of the things that they've learned into their work environment.
Aye, you're right. It's been, so there's the event itself, but there's everything that happens around that event. And I think it was Amanda that came up with it. The best phrase I found was, what GovCamp helps you with, it helps you find your tribe. That's when folk turn up and think, oh my God, these are my people. you can actually hear them. You can actually see that in the mind clicking with that. So, you know, that's satisfaction there that your manager hooked those people up. We've also had folks say it's like 3D Twitter come to life because they will have been speaking to, you know, searching for people on Twitter when they've got an issue or they're trying to find out about a topic. And they start having those, you know, informal conversations with folk. And they may have built up a relationship with someone over months or even years, but they've never met in GovCamp is when they finally met someone. So there's all of that where, there's lots of hugging at GovCamp. But we should say that, Amanda, shouldn't we? There is lots of hugging.
Absolutely, we should say that. To the point at which we were discussing this on Twitter, and there's actually now some stickers for Hug Camp. So we've joked that where we can safely all get back together again, and it's good to hug and we can hug, then Hug Camp will be happening. It's like Sarah said, it's finding your tribe. It's 3D Twitter come to life. There's someone fantastic called Jenny Vass who actually created a sticker which says, I know you from Twitter. And she hands them out around at GovCamp and other events. And yeah, it's brilliant to find those people and to make those connections and realize, you know, a lot of the time you're not alone in trying to make things better and to change the culture and deliver really good stuff for the public. So yeah, absolutely. Finding your tribe is what we've always said.
With finding the tribe, and as I said, there's lots of events around GovCamp, as we've mentioned. There's not just the GovCamp, there's the like the cheese camp, there's the pub camps before and afterwards to again create that safe space where people can continue the conversation. And what we find is folk make those connections, whether it's at the pre or post events or whether it's on the day. And it doesn't mean that, you know, when you're at GovCamp, you have to go to every single session. It's if you want to spend time, as we call it, corridor camp, and I think old school we call that networking, but it's actually corridor camp where people can just feel relaxed and catch up with people like, again, 3D Twitter that they've never met before in real life to discuss the topics that they've, you know, that's kept them passionate about and that they want to try and fix.
Yeah, I can imagine that happening. And I suppose, David, have you seen that kind of networking lead to genuine action as well in workplaces in UK government at all?
I mean, yes, I'd certainly say that there's examples of when people have gone ahead and set up their own like sort of little internal government pressure groups to get stuff done. There's been some interesting occasions when you might be in a session at GovCamp and one of the people who's in there, not necessarily the person who's actually pitched the idea, but there's one person who's really enthusiastic in the session. And then people say, well, why don't you, you know, set up a group of people to do that? And they're like, oh, I guess I will. And then, you know, suddenly they become motivated and they go back to their colleagues or they go back to social media and they carry along the people that they've met at the GovCamp and they, you know, form a group of people who want to fix things. And this year, despite the fact that I've been going to GovCamp for probably the better part of 10 years and I've been on the committee for 5 years, I'd never actually run a session before until this year, and I did 2 this year. And I found that I've come away suddenly with a posse of people from both sessions who want to help me fix things in government. And suddenly I'm running 2 things to go off and make things better. And it's just the real joy, not just as folks were saying about finding your tribe, but finding people who share the same passion, often about the specific sort of really quite niche and weird things that you really want to fix in government. And often you meet people and they say, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the only one that cared about this particular thing that is not good for how government deals with the public. But now I've been to a session at GovCamp. I found another 10 or 20 people who also care about that. And between us, we can go back to our managers and say, this is what we should do in terms of changing the policy, or this is what we should do in terms of changing the technology and make real change for all people's lives.
So I just wanted to give another example to build on what David has given you. And this was a few years ago. And I think one of the topics was around, why is it when we go to tech conferences, it's always just white middle-aged men in the audience, when there's women that go as well, but there's hardly any women speakers. And out of that, a few of the attendees set up an organization called 300 Seconds. And it was about giving women that safe space to practice public speaking. So if we could get more women confident with public speaking, perhaps we could start changing the makeup and audience of when it comes, not just to a conference with the audience, but with the panel members as well. I refuse to go to conferences now that are just all male panels, because that is not representative of where I work. So that's another sort of tangible thing that has come out of GovCamp. So yeah, 300 Seconds is a really good example.
That's really interesting. And as you say, that's also really important. And I think it's also important to say that ultimately the people who benefit from all of this are both the people who work within government and also citizens, because if projects are getting completed that perhaps had obstacles in the way before, then everyone essentially benefits.
Yeah, you're right. And that's what drives, I think, the initial passion for GovCamp. It's we're working in the public sector. We want to make things better. Nobody wants to build a process that's so painful for the public to try and interact with government, or even internally interact with government departments. We want to do things better and we want to find a better way. And by coming together and sharing examples and talking about it, I think we've got, it's the start of the conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I just wanted to also pick up on maybe some of the, because you've just come out of having an event, and I wondered if there were any kind of emerging themes that were worth bringing up in this discussion, or perhaps emerging themes from previous years. You know, what's the kind of trend that's worth talking about right now?
So I can jump in first if I was want to come in afterwards. I think the one thing I would say is, if I look at kind of GovCamps back, like I said, my first one in 2011, they were still very technical focused and very kind of of the time. So particular tools like how are folks using Yammer? And if we look at the kind of topics we had this year, you know, we had things like, how do you build a cross-government community? How do you work in the open? And really great things like complexity and system change. Like, what does that actually look like? And as I mentioned before, as the diversity and the demographic has changed for GovCamp, those topics have evolved as well over the years. So one of my favorite sessions last year was led by Sam Villis, and it was all about, how do we tell stories by using the tiger who came to tea? And how do we improve our storytelling skills as people working in and for public service? So those themes really evolve over the year. There's always things about kind of tech and data, but as you might expect as well, with COVID and with working remotely, then lots of things about how we work from home effectively, how our teams are feeling, how do we improve well-being. So the conversation, is really topical. It goes with the time, it comes with the people, and it changes and flows over years.
Yeah, so there's a couple of themes that I would talk about. There's the one that I'm particularly passionate about, which is why, as a civil servant or as someone working in local government, is it so difficult to work with your fellow public servants in other organisations? The way that the government is set up, the way that it's funded, the way that technology is run inside different departments just makes it really difficult to work collaboratively across organizational boundaries. And that's a conversation that's been going on for a few years and has come up again quite a lot in GovCamp we had in January just gone. And there's lots of people now dedicating themselves to trying to address that problem, because it's something that everyone recognizes. So it's just a question of how we can come together and fix it. But I think the really strong theme that came out of this year was data. Lots and lots of sessions on data. What kind of data should the government produce? How do we do it openness and transparency? How do we ensure that data is of good quality? What are the risks in sharing too much data? How does data feed into AI and government using AI to do decision making? So there's a lot of stuff around that. People have lots of different niche bits of that they are interested in, but that was the strong common theme. One of the things that I do as running the volunteers is that I go through the notes at the end of every day and produce a little word cloud. So it picks out the most common words that people took in notes in all the sessions. And when I put all of those together across the 3 days of GovCamp this year, we hold it across 3 days because normally it would be in 1 day in the physical space, but because we didn't want people to necessarily be sitting on a couch on a screen for 8 hours, we spread it across 3 days this year to give people a bit of a break. And at the end of the 3 days this year, when I generated the word cloud from all of the session notes, it came out strongly with the four words, data people need things, which was kind of the takeaway from this year, which was we had a lot of people right up from Jenny Tennyson, who heads up the Open Data Institute, all the way down to individual data scientists and data engineers working in teams in government, all struggling for various reasons to get the data that they need to do things, and being able to get together and collaborate and share really good ideas and their frustrations and take away good things they can work on together afterwards. That's just been amazing.
Oh, it's really interesting. I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens next year and if a lot of those projects are now further along and if people have overcome some of those issues that they wanted to talk about at the time. I actually wanted to touch on something that Sarah mentioned at the start, which was going online in January for your event and how that changed the event or what you had to take into account and the success of the event as well. You know, what were the differences really, Sarah?
Oh, right. Well, yes, that was a lot of, I would say normally for a GovCamp, we start planning about 6 to 8 months in advance for a normal GovCamp. Obviously, this year with COVID, we realised we couldn't do that. And we'd held off trying to organise anything just to see what was happening in that space because, you know, lockdown, then not in lockdown, then back in lockdown. And then we make the decision, and we did test the waters, that yes, people want a GovCamp. If even more, people said they needed GovCamp even more because of COVID, because normally they see GovCamp as their inoculation for the rest of the year. It gives them hope. So we definitely had to do GovCamp because we didn't want to let our community down. And yeah, myself and Amanda and David and others within in the team, we were trying to figure out the best way of doing this. And we needed to make the place safe. Normally, when we have a GovCamp, it's in a building, so we've got a controlled, safe space, and people are safe in there to have the conversations they need to have. How do we do that online? Normally, we would be tweeting things and sending out links. We didn't do any of that. We decided we would have a Google group set up, so that would effectively be like a mailing list for all of our everyone who registered for GovCamp this year. We had our channel set up in Slack, so we encouraged people to join Slack. That's where a lot of the discussions were happening. Again, it was away from the public domain, just so we've got that safe space. And in terms of the online events, none of the links were publicized publicly. They were all within, you know, behind walls, and only made public to those that were on the sign-up lists that way. And we also have, sorry, I should mention, we do have a code of conduct, which we updated for this year because having an online event is, you need to have a slightly different code of conduct. And we had to make sure we had the support systems in place to deal with any questions that were coming up, any technical questions, or if someone needed to raise an issue, it was a code of conduct issue. So we had the email address they could contact us on and a phone number. But I'm glad to say, I don't think we had a single issue raised with code of conduct. We had such a lovely bunch of folk this year. Everyone was super respectful. And the swag that we got, well, normally we try to not do swag because we're conscious of the environment. But we decided this year, with it being COVID, that we would try and give them a little something physical for UK GovCamp. So we put together this care package in eco-friendly packaging, and we got all our sponsors to try and be as eco-friendly as possible with what we're putting in. And we got some fantastic feedback on the version one chargers. They went down an absolute storm. Although I think a couple of folk thought they were a coaster at first, till we explained to them, no, that's where you plug it in and you charge your phone on. And within the care package, what we also did is we had cards printed out, and cards where you could hold up to the screen where it says "You're on mute," or like "May I speak next, please," or "Awesome." So lots of, and those went down a storm. In fact, I have been using them in work, and everybody wants to know where I got those cue cards from, because they all want to make their own ones so they could do something similar when they're on video calls, because everything we do now is all video call based.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, brilliant. It sounds like there was a lot to think about there, but it sounds like generally it went really well. So that's great to hear. In terms of, I just had one final question really, and it's for Amanda, and it was around the area of kind of inclusivity and obviously, you know, what Sarah mentioned before about gender, you know, the gender disparity as well, and in panels and things like that. And what you mentioned, Amanda, about introverts and extroverts, I was just thinking generally the kind of really important thing that the event seems to bring is confidence potentially to a lot of people. So, you know, people are less shy, or people actually realize that their ideas are something that's worth persevering or need investigating. Or as you say, Sarah, that kind of women should be on a panel, and they should be able to speak and explain their experience because they've got great experience as well, and likewise anyone else. So yeah, Amanda, I don't know if you agree with that. Do you think that's a lot about confidence, and have you seen that with some of the guests?
Yeah, definitely. I think confidence is such a personal issue, isn't it? And I think for us as organisers, it's making sure we don't put anything in the way that can hinder that. So like we said, thinking really carefully about how people will pitch on the day or do their pre-pitching, and what our role is in making that feel really comfortable to people. So as I mentioned before, when we're kind of in person, it's normally myself and Janet, another organizer up front, doing our cheerleading, usually wearing sequins, trying to get people excited and wanting to pitch. It's simple things like when we set up the room, we make sure there's no kind of endless rows of chairs, and there's clear gangway in the middle so people can get up more easily and come up and pitch. We also kind of partway through the session, you know, we'll pause and encourage people who haven't pitched yet to come up and to get their voice out there. And one of our other organisers, David Buck, has a really lovely phrase, which is that everybody has a pitch inside of them. And we remind people that every single year, you know, there's no silly pitch, there's no silly idea. I remember in my first GovCamp back in 2011, I pitched for the first time. I think I had maybe 10 people come to my session, and I thought I'd failed. It wasn't popular. And actually, it was great. It was a really intimate conversation that led to me directly changing a bunch of things on the policy I was working on. So, like I say, there's no bad idea. It's down to us to help make that space feel really comfortable. We have pitched people before and they don't want to do it. We encourage people to come up in pairs. So yeah, confidence is a really personal thing. But we're always here to try to help people kind of overcome and get their ideas out there. And people never regret it. You know, when we look at the blog posts afterwards, people always say, I either, you know, wish I'd pitched, or actually, you know, the pitching felt really intimidating at first, but when I got up there, I really loved it. And, you know, we just want to create that space where everybody can have their voice heard and talk things through.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. There is definitely no such thing as a bad idea. Well, brilliant. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Sarah, Amanda and David, and it's been really interesting to hear about the event and how it's developed over time and to become the Glastonbury of government, as you say. But everyone at Version One wishes you all the best for the year ahead. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Remember, if you're interested, you can reach out to us on Twitter just at UK GovCamp.
Great. Well, that's it from us. I've been your host, Suraj Shah. For more episodes of the 101 podcast, please visit version1.com/1-0-1. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.